Welcome to the Near Post Local, where too much football or futsal is never likely to be enough. Football in the capital region. I'm Peter Funnell. Tonight's program is in the form of an extended fireside chat with Heather Reid, CEO Capital Football. Heather is the only female CEO of a state or territory football association in Australia. Tonight we speak about the review of the high performance program. Then we go on to the review that is underway in the men's state league. We discuss that terrific innovation in 2009, the summer 20s, and it looks as though the summer 20s for 2010 is going to be a lot larger affair. It should be, and every Premier League club should have a presence. We end this part of the fireside chat with an important subject, women's football. Some of the very best football is being played in the Women's Premier League. The relationship between the Women's Premier League clubs, coaches, ACTAS players, and the ACTAS coach is a model for cooperation and development. Every opportunity is being exploited to give these young, talented female players a chance to excel. And then, of course, there is the related pathway to Canberra United. The W League is just around the corner and planning is well underway. That's all we've got time for in tonight's program. The other half of the fireside chat will be formed as a podcast and put up on the Near Post Local blog site, and it will cover several other important topics we just don't have time for tonight. The Futsal Premier League. There are big changes in futsal in the ACT, and the intention is to put in an additional level of competition between community-based futsal and the national competition we engage in every year. This is terribly important. The Boomerangs made great steps forward when they competed in the New South Wales Super League. They intend to do so again this season, and get yourself to the Boomerangs if you want to play some good futsal outside of the ACT. It's well worth it. The other matters that are addressed in this second interview include the review of the disputes and discipline policies that we employ here in the ACT. Big issue this. And finally, a very interesting one, but one most of us are really not engaged in. Heather speaks at some length about one of the most critical resource issues that face Capital Football, and indeed the Capital Football Board, as it does every club: the availability of grounds, the maintenance of those grounds, and our access to those grounds in order to play football. The simple truth is, we cannot get to the grounds that we need to play football all the year. We have limited access to these grounds, and it's largely around the winter competition. This has to change, because football is getting close to being all the year round. Let's get started. We're speaking to Heather Reid, CEO Capital Football, and we're about to get an update on the many things that are going on in Capital Football, football and futsal. Can't get too much of it. How are you, Heather?
I'm not too bad, Peter, at this time of year. Of course, it's been a big couple of months, hasn't it, with the World Cup and national championships. And, of course, let's not forget our own Kanga Cup that was phenomenal over the last few weeks.
Absolutely. Yeah, really good tournament, that. Right off the bat, question without notice. Will Capital Football ban vuvuzelas? Please say you will.
Well, I certainly know that they won't be welcome around Canberra United games. Whether or not we can ban them around the rest of the games that Capital Football has responsibility for, but yeah, I'm pretty sure that they won't be allowed to come into enclosed games where Canberra United's playing. It's just madness, isn't it?
I'm thinking of putting a political party for the next election. Ban the Vuvuzela party.
Good move.
I reckon I'll get a vote.
It might go with the sun-ripened tomatoes.
Yes, party. It's right up there. Yeah.
Well, the party.
Yeah. Very good. Ah, football.
It's all good.
Yep. Now let's go to something that interests lots of people but doesn't represent the bulk of young and older players playing, the high-performance program. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, how have you found this first iteration of the high-performance program in its current model?
Look, I mean, I think it's been very well received. The summer program that started last October, yep, which was a development program, more kids, more contacts, providing an opportunity for more coaches to have the experience and get trained in what we're actually trying to do, and particularly in the 1-4-3-3 curriculum model.
Yep.
I think that worked quite well. The winter program, obviously, we had some rather contentious issues about whether the boys' squads would be playing squads or not. I think it's settled down very well. And to some extent, you know, there's evidence to say that, you know, we would not have had a separate boys 15 squad to play in a competition. Those boys are playing for clubs in the Premier 16s or they're engaged with ACTAS.
Yep.
The midweek fixtures for the boys 14s, I think, have been going very well, rostered into competition process. And, of course, the boys 13s seem to be ticking over quite well.
I have to say, I've never understood why that playing squad was maintained, though.
Well, it was a view that...
But it's the anomaly out there that attracts...
It is. I mean, they could have finished after the championships in April and gone to clubs.
Yeah.
But there was a view that it might be good for their development going forward to 14s championship and high-performance teams next year if they had that experience staying
together.
But
that's the playing squad argument, isn't it?
Well, it's interesting too. I mean, I haven't seen the detail of the results, but both the boys 13s and the under 14s played in the Kanga Cup. Up an age group.
Mm.
The 13s didn't do so well, and yet the 14s, who play both for the Capital Football program during the week and for club on the weekends, actually won the tournament.
They did. I saw a few of their games. They drove their coach to distraction in the first game as they, well, obviously they're on holiday mode. Mm. That changed very smartly the next day, I have to say. And Zorin had them ticking over like a Swiss watch.
So with that kind of experience, playing twice a week, plus the Kanga Cup experience, come national championship time for Coffs in October, we would expect great things from that boys under 14s.
No pressure,
Zorin, or anything like that, but we would
expect... they're playing in good style. Mm. And they were able to recover their situation. That Kanga Cup final was as good as any you'll see around, and they were playing up in age, so their resistance was high for them. I personally liked that under 14s model.
Yeah.
Zorin has managed to get 45 games into them.
Mm.
They've done real well.
Yeah. So what we've got is, I think, a reasonably good looking program. There's some gaps, obviously. We didn't have the numbers in the boys 15s or the girls 17s for reasons largely relating to what we talked about before, that overlap with ACTAS. So we were probably about 20 to 30 players shy of what we expected overall. One thing that I can say tonight to Peter is that Ron Smith has agreed to carry out a review of our high performance program.
Right.
Listeners will be aware that we've mentioned the need for an independent review again. We had a review in 2007.
Yeah.
In the last 3 years, a number of things have changed. We've got the, you know, we've got the national curriculum.
Yeah.
We've got more intervention from FFA about what they expect. We've got changes to the national championship format and ages. Of course, we've got a new level as well with the junior championships.
Yes.
And we really are at a point now where Ron can come in and start to have a look at the current high performance program against the objectives in our strategic plan for high performance. And he's going to be looking at a range of things, including, you know, the quality and the structure and the delivery of the program, the needs of participants and how they're met, the progression through to higher level competition, the appropriateness of the coaching staff and the qualifications that they need, and of course then make some recommendations on changes or improvements which need to be put in place for 2011. All of this detail is hot off the press.
Yeah.
The board has only just discussed it last night.
Right.
And Ron will be meeting with me again next week to go through the detail. There will be information on the website, the terms of reference and how people can have a say in the review. I expect there will probably be a questionnaire available for players, for coaches, for parents and for other stakeholders to provide their input. So again, it's a stay tuned for more news, but it's happening.
How much time has he got to do this?
He doesn't want to rush it. We initially said we'd like something finished by the end of September so that it would influence the shape of the summer program.
Yeah.
But in meeting with Ron last week, he said no, he does not want to rush it. He wants to go and have a look and observe how the program is unfolding now in winter, how the summer program is delivered. And the intention is that he would provide a report to the board probably in December so that it can be finalised in February. And it will impact on next year's winter program.
Yeah, essentially the
2011-12. And look, I mean, as we've talked about, the most contentious thing in relation to the high performance program this year has been about the issue around the playing squads for boys, issues about communication of what we're doing and how we've delivered the program.
Yeah.
From my point of view, continuous improvement on what is a very important part of our business, but may not necessarily impact on a large percentage of our punters.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So it's another cog in the massive wheel of services that we provide, but it's a cog that is probably at the pointy end of our player pathway, and we need to make sure that what we're doing for boys and girls from under 9s through to under 15s, primarily in the high performance pathway, is on the same page as FFA. It's being delivered in a quality way with good communication and good service input, etc.
I think you're absolutely right there, because once they go plus of 15, this is handed off to other responsible parties to develop that talented stream.
Yeah, well, there's only...
Isn't there?
There's only 15 or 16 that are selected at that level to go into ACT Academy of Sport.
Correct.
And then also into Premier League structure.
Yeah.
So in the absence of a boys' youth team, National Youth League team, then the pathway for the boys is out of the high performance into Premier 16s, Premier 18s, etc.
Yeah.
And for the girls, it's similarly out of the high performance into the Premier League structure, but also into Canberra United when they turn 17 or 18.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind that Canberra United can only have 3 youth players at 17 or under.
Yeah, right.
And whilst this year I expect Emily Van Egmond and Carlia Hogg would keep 2 of those positions, and as I said, we'd welcome another player into that youth mix.
Just before I forget, for the listener that might not be familiar with Ron Smith in football, this is a very credible person, isn't it?
Oh, there's no doubt. Ron Smith was the second coach at the Australian Institute of Sport, I think, following Jimmy Shoulder.
Mm.
He was a long-time head coach at AIS men's program.
Yep.
He is a technical advisor to Football Federation Australia. In fact, he worked very closely with the technical team in South Africa, and prior to that, the 2006 World Cup campaign. Mm. Many people indeed credit Ron and his technical analysis for actually getting the Socceroos into the 2006 World Cup, because of the analysis that he did on Uruguay and other teams that Australia was likely to face.
Mm.
He's worked as coach in Malaysia. Of course, he was appointed coach of Perth Glory for a little while there through FFA. But he's got great credentials, and I'm sure he's going to do a very good job.
Okay, well, that's the message. A very credible person is looking at this. If you want your say, you'd best get your say in.
As I said, details will be on the website in the next couple of weeks. I'm just going to finalise the methodology and the process that Ron wants to undertake. But people will be able to have an opportunity to have input, whether they're a player or a coach. Indeed, he's also looking at some feedback from former players and maybe other people that were involved in the program, as well as clubs and anybody else who wants to put their two bobs in.
Well, when it's been and done and you haven't said anything, you can't say anything then.
That's right. Well, it wouldn't be a year of Capital Football if we didn't have some kind of review, Peter.
Well,
there's usually a review
true.
Of whether it's the Men's Premier League or...
Yeah.
Well, in fact, we've got 2 going now this time with the State League review as well, so...
Yeah, the review, I regret the high performance as a review, but it's certainly a timely point of reflection, so it helps recalibrate the compass a little bit.
Well, as I said, there's a number of things that have happened in the last 3 years on the national level, the local level, and clearly, you know, we are a business that would like to, maintain a focus on continuous improvement. So if there are things broken or weak about this particular program, then we need to strengthen it and change it so that it just becomes better each time.
And look, if the NTC Challenge and the National Junior Championships, the Youth Championships, have anything to go by thus far, post this new curriculum, it would be fair to say the FFA are colouring in the spaces themselves. So, you know, we feed off them, so it's a bit hard to know what this full story is till we get a bit further down the path.
That's right.
But high performance is what we're aiming for.
That's right.
And then
more players from the ACT making more national teams.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. That's the end goal. Be as good as you can be.
That's right.
The Men's State League, you're doing a review of it. What's the background of that?
Well, we've been quite keen for some time to have a look at the way in which teams nominate for the respective divisions from 1 through to 10.
I've often wondered that, actually.
Yeah. Well, my personal view, Peter, is, and it's probably reflected in what's happened over the years, is that teams nominate for the time, 1 o'clock or 3 o'clock, rather than for the actual division in some cases. Obviously, with a case like a club that's got 5, 6 to 10 teams, they're going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 all the way through. But there are some really quality teams kicking around in Division 5 that probably should be in Division, you know, 4 or Division 2 even. So what we've also seen in the last few years with the growth of the Premier League structure and the now the fact that there's, you know, Premier 18s and 16s, there's a little bit of a gap within the Division 1 and Division 2 ranks. And so we don't really fill those two divisions very well. With the complement of 10 teams for a range of reasons. One is that clubs are just reluctant to play in Division 1. And what we want to be able to try and see is if there's some better way of grading teams or allocating teams to the divisions. And without preempting anything that might come out of the review, you know, there is a suggestion that, you know, we need a sort of a senior level of state competition and maybe a more social level of state competition. But clearly, with 10 divisions, we're at maximum capacity almost in terms of how many more teams we can take within those divisions because of the grounds and the kickoff times. So we want to be able to look to say, well, if we do things a little bit differently, can we include more teams? Can we fill Division 1 and Division 2 with the 10 teams in each? Can we play games midweek? Can we move to another time slot or whatever? But at the moment, we're kind of locked into that 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock. And for a lot of people who are tradespeople or working on a Saturday, they don't want to play at 1, they'll opt for the 3 o'clock.
Yeah, I can see how that would be a distraction.
Yeah. So we're welcoming input from all the people involved, and the consultation process will extend over the next few months. So I encourage listeners to have a look at the website and provide their feedback to Alistair Grocock as they see fit.
Could I ask you, do clubs still require to produce two teams? If they want to enter a State League 1 team, have they got to provide a State League 2 as well?
That's the preference, in order to try and have a match when you're doing the draws, so that there's a team that's matched in State League 1 with their counterpart in State League 2. Yeah. It makes it very difficult when you're doing draws and trying to allocate games to particular venues if there's, you know, a team from one club in State League 1 and they don't have a team in State League 2. And in fact, that's another thing that we're quite keen to have a look at, is whether or not we maintain the home and away basis for teams, meaning that, you know, you could have a single game at Narrabundah and another game at Deakin, and whether or not it's more practical for appointment of referees and information, you know, communication sort of issues, to have them at cluster venues. So we'd go to a similar model to what's used for the Masters and the Women's on Sunday and the junior games. So you go to a venue where there are 5 or 6 fields where you can have more referees being able to move around from the 1 o'clock to the 3 o'clock as opposed to single games at home and away venues.
I think that's the way ahead. Mm-hmm. I think it makes a lot of sense. You've got to reduce your administrative tail and keep these, well, the grounds need to be maintained too, and that's a constant worry if the effort's spread over a large area.
Well, I think we tried to negotiate that kind of arrangement with the Men's Masters on a Sunday morning. You know, if you know there were 4 games going on at one venue, it's much better for socialising and again with the referees going to one venue. But for whatever reasons, I think it's largely stayed at home and away. So you might have 2 games at Corwell and you've got 2 games at Kippax or Page or somewhere else in the north. And anyway, so we really want to just try and look and see where there are economies of scale and savings and better management.
Yeah, I just reflect on the Premier League when any of us are slotted in to go to Hawker. It's still your home game if it's your home game scheduled. So you run the canteen, you set it up and go. It's pretty painless now.
The canteen arrangements would really need to be well managed, because obviously clubs rely a lot on getting that income every second week. But as you say, we can do that, so that, you know, there are some clubs that don't run a canteen.
Yeah, that's true too.
But those clubs that do want a canteen, then it would be rostered on an equitable basis, so that, you know, they can get that financial return.
Yeah, I think it's all doable. Well, that's the State League review. When's that going to wind up?
I'm not quite sure of the timetable, but certainly we're looking at it over the next few months with the intention to bring in change if necessary or if warranted for 2011. So people have got another month or a couple of months to provide some comment.
Right. How many sitting on the review?
I think there are four people on the panel,
yeah.
Including George Lemon, who is the chair of the men's standing committee. Right. He's looking after the chairing of that, plus obviously the men's league manager, somebody from the board, and another club person.
So the message is clear enough. If you've got something to say, your club's got to say,
here's an opportunity.
Here's an opportunity to do it. If you don't do it, don't complain next season.
And it is important that it's only looking at the state league competition.
Yep.
It's not dealing with the Premier League,
no,
or indeed the Masters competition at this stage.
Or the women's.
Or the women's, that's right. It's the men's division 1 to 8.
Terrific.
1 to 10.
1 to 10, yes.
1 to 10.
A lot of football gets played. Let's move sideways into the summer 20s. I haven't met a coach, well, there are only four teams in the inaugural summer 20s. I haven't heard a bad word said about the summer 20s. That experience was valued by every club. If you see the way they're playing at the moment, there might be a hint about the advantages it gave the clubs for displaying and resolving issues around players and potential players for the next season.
Well, we met with the teams in the Gatorade Men's Premier League a couple of weeks ago.
What was their reaction?
Very, very positive. We will definitely be running the under-20s again, and in fact we hope it will double so that there's 8 clubs. Alistair's just finalising the paperwork for that now. As you said, we started it last year with 4. Mm. We think we'll easily get 8 clubs, primarily the Premier League clubs, but if we don't have 8 Premier League clubs, then we might open it up to another state league club to round it out to 8, which means we'd probably do 2 evenings, 2 games each evening. And quite clearly it will be 11 aside and the full 45-minute halves.
Yep.
Very, very popular, and a very important thing that we can provide to those young players to continue their playing opportunities throughout the year, but also to give an opportunity for potential National Youth League players to get more game experience.
That's true too, yeah.
And if we have any National Youth League coaches looking for players, then they can come in and have a look at the players in our competition this year for potential move to National Youth League teams next year.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent opportunity, and the conditions are just so fantastic for football. And if it's being played at Hawker, well, I imagine McKellar or Deakin would be, well, obviously excellent surfaces too. It's a fantastic way to spend an evening.
Well, it helps us also deal with that gap between the youth and the ACTAS program and the National League. And it's a summer competition, as you say. We've got Hawker, but also let's not forget we might possibly use ANU as well, because it's got the 2 synthetic fields there now. Although I understand they're a little bit harder and not quite as forgiving for players compared to Hawker, but there are a couple of options around for us with goalposts.
That is true, actually, yeah. When do you think it'll start? What's the projected
We're probably looking at sort of mid to late October.
Yeah.
So if winter season with the grand finals is finishing around about the middle of September, I think the third weekend in September is the grand finals, and we'll probably look to start it after the school holidays in October.
Well, that's fantastic. Look, any Premier League club that hasn't got a team in this summer 20s is just a fool to themselves. And my unsolicited advice to any under 20 player in any Premier League club that isn't in the summer 20s, get yourself a new club real quick. Pick any of those that are playing in the summer 20s.
That's right. And there's an opportunity to run the canteen at Hawker as well on any of those nights and earn a little bit more money.
There you go. Well, let's talk a little bit about women's football. I reckon some of the best football being played in the ACT region at the moment is women's football. I can do no better than the game against Waden Valley and Canberra FC last weekend at Deakin on Sunday. Terrific game. Absolutely. Yeah, by distinction to the men's Premier League game, ANU and Canberra FC, which was a shocker. Hope you hear that out there. It was dead boring.
I'm sorry I didn't get to either of those 2 games, Peter.
But the women's game was a howler. It was a beaut.
Yeah, it's good to see that the slight changes we put in place for the Women's League this year are paying off. Those changes include the addition of the Premier 18s to the mix, so all of the clubs have to have the Premier League plus a reserve team and the 18s. And I think, you know, there's been a little bit of movement around the clubs with the playing personnel, but clearly Bell West is the team that's leading the charge. But interestingly, in the last few weeks, they've really had some big challenges.
Well, the gap is closing.
The gap's closing. In fact, ANU, that was sitting second last on the table but undefeated in the last five games, ANU beat Bell West 2 weeks ago.
Sure did.
And then they held out Belconnen to a draw last weekend. And I think the other really exciting thing that's worth noting is the fact that Ray Juna has allowed the ACTAS players to play for women's league teams on the weekend if they want to. So we've seen Caitlin Munoz regularly now playing for Belconnen. She's bagged about 17, 18 goals in a number of games. But we've also got Grace Gill and Jenny Bissett and Snez Veljanovska and other ACTAS players now turning out for some of the clubs, which adds value to the competition. In many ways, it allows Premier League players to have that experience of playing with National League type players like Caitlin, as well as to play against them. I mean, you can imagine the excitement for a young defender having to, you know, going home and telling mum and dad that she's been out there marking Caitlin Munoz, you know, national player, Canberra United player for the game, and they've held them out to a nil or draw or something similar. It's really encouraging, and we hope that those ACTAS players will be able to continue to play in the Premier League next year.
Oh, look, I know we spoke about this a couple of months ago, and it was intended that it was just beginning to happen. It's been a masterstroke, really. It's enlivened the competition. This might sound like a cheap shot, but I don't mean it that way. I just wish the same could be said of the men's program, because some of this talent is pretty rich at ACTAS, and it's just fantastic to see it playing. But the women's competition is greatly advantaged. I work with a young coach in Belconnen in the junior ranks. I know how excited she gets. And you know, it's a bit of stargazing at these experienced players. They take their lead off them.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the leadership issue is really important. You know, Caitlin, for example, is a great role model as a leader as well as a player, and others can look up to her. In terms of the boys' competition, really that's a decision that's got to be made by ACTAS and the coach. I've heard it before as well, Peter, that people would love to be able to see those kids playing for clubs on the weekend, and we could arrange the midweek fixtures at the same time. But whilst ACTAS plays in the competition for points, they can't play for other teams in the same competition on the weekend.
Yeah, understand completely. Just sad. But that said,
you'll have to talk to Milo.
He has a strong view, and his views are informed by his experience, and that's fair enough too. Look, the other thing about women's football, we've touched on it before. It's in great shape in the ACT because it's got such a terrific pathway through to the National League, Canberra United.
We're quite pleased, and in fact I can probably say tonight that you'll be the first to know publicly that Ray Juna will be continuing as coach for Canberra United.
I'm pleased to hear that.
That will officially be announced as soon as we can get our chairperson Kate Lundy off the campaign trail and in front of a camera to make a sport announcement. But we're delighted that Ray will continue. It gives the consistency for the team, and the players are delighted with his continuation as well. So he will take over the sort of responsibilities for Canberra United from the ACTAS role on the 1st of September, and that's when we'll really start to step up the whole Canberra United player announcements. And hopefully in the next few weeks we'll also have the draw for the W League, so we'll be able to know when we're playing. But I can say the W League will start the first weekend in November. It'll be a little bit later because of national team commitments in October. It'll start in November, and then it will go over Christmas, New Year, and the grand final will be in early February.
Okay, good.
So I'm hoping we don't have a game on the 1st of January, which is a Saturday, and FFA is talking about having a televised game that day. So I've said we don't want a home game because I don't think we'll get any people there to put it on, let alone come and watch. So the team may be travelling away that weekend. But the other really good thing is we've been successful in obtaining two very important leadership grants from the Australian Sports Commission for women's football. One of those grants relates to a women's coaching program, where Our game development manager, Pat McCann, will be facilitating a network of about half a dozen female coaches who will benefit from doing some education and obtaining higher qualifications, as well as practical experience and then mentoring from coaches. So that program will sort of unfold in the next month or so. Mm. And I think we'll be one of the leading federations in terms of providing that level of support to female coaches. I'm hoping that a former national player from Canberra will be a scholarship coach to Ray Juna for the W League season
for the
as
w,
well.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah.
In the similar way that Caitlin Munoz was a scholarship coach or apprentice coach last time.
Yep.
I'm hoping that Amy Wilson will take on that role next time. She's currently coaching the ACT schoolgirls, and we believe, with a little bit of support and guidance, we'll help her along her coaching pathway. And the other leadership grants is for a mentoring and ongoing development program for female managers, leaders, and referees. Rachel Law, Women's League manager, and myself will be facilitating a mentoring program, again, for about 6 to 10 women over a six-month period to provide them with the necessary, education and knowledge and mentoring with a range of mentors for each individual mentee over the next 8 months.
Oh, that is good news. Yeah. All money invested there is returned 100-fold, I reckon.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, never put enough into that. Heather, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Peter.
You're listening to the Near Post Local on 2XXFM, the Australian Community Radio Network. Well, that's it for the Near Post Local. If you want this podcast, go to www.nearpostlocal.blogspot.com. You'll find a lot of other interesting materials around football there for your consumption. Enjoy your football and futsal. See you next time. Ta-da. Round and round, up and down, through the streets of